Welcome to the ATL Podcast Network.
Mental health in the Black community is so stigmatized. People are more afraid of being labeled crazy than actually living with a mental illness. Like, it's so ironic that people will read every single self-help book there is instead of just going to therapy. Mental health is real, people, and we all have problems. So why not be the best version of you? And if that includes therapy, what's the worst that could happen? We need to look at mental health issues and how they look in minorities. Because they don't really look the same in everyone in general. But contrary to popular belief, it presents differently across racial lines. So that strong Black woman that is super irritable and always popping off on everybody is probably dealing with anxiety and depression. And she doesn't even know that that's what's going on. Your homeboy who wants to get drunk and smoke two blunts every day is probably an addict, even if he says that he can stop whenever he wants. Nobody wants to turn up every single day. That's not a thing. They're probably hiding all kinds of pain that they're in, and you just don't even recognize it. You just see them as the party friend. I'm here to talk about all of that. What is a mental health issue? What does it look like, and how do we treat it? Everyone, this is therapist KP, aka Kiwasha Naomi, and this is a new episode of Mental Unwind. I want to thank you guys for coming. I really appreciate you listening to me and joining me on this journey of mine. Today we have a very special guest, another professor of mine. I actually had her, I think, for three classes. This is Dr. Mary Gay, and we're going to talk about a very interesting topic that a lot of people in the minority community aren't aware of. It's called borderline personality disorder, but I'm going to let Dr. Gay introduce herself. Dr. Gay, how are you doing today?
I'm good.
All right.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for coming. I really appreciate that. So tell the people who you are.
Sure. I am an assistant professor at Argosy University in Atlanta. I teach counseling students who are at the graduate level, master's and doctoral students, how to be good counselors. I also have my own practice where I see a variety of individuals, families, and couples for lots of different problems.
Okay. So what would you say that you specialize in?
Probably borderline personality would be one of those things. I also work a lot with trauma, childhood trauma, and how it manifests in adults.
Okay.
And sometimes those two go together.
Yeah.
Not always, but sometimes.
Okay. So we're going to jump right in because this is kind of a heavy topic, but we're going to try to make it as light as possible for such a heavy topic.
Mm-hmm.
So what exactly is borderline personality disorder?
Yeah. So I probably should explain what a personality disorder is first. A personality disorder is a way of being in the world or acting in the world that's like long-term. It's part of your character. So it's not like like a bipolar disorder or a depression or one of those kinds of things where those are actual mental illnesses. Borderline personality and the other disorders are certain clusters of behaviors and patterns that are long-term that create a lot of problems for other people in the client's life mostly.
Okay. So is there, since you say it's kind of long-term and they're different, is there any real treatment, for lack of a better term, for it? Like, are you ever going to be cured from a personality disorder?
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on which personality disorder it is.
Oh.
So we're talking today about borderline, and that's one of, in the last 20 years, that's become one of the most treatable personality disorders. And there is some evidence that some people go into remission from the symptoms and are pretty functional. They might have a resurgence of symptoms under stress, significant stress. So we have a lot of good ways of treating borderline these days.
Okay. So that's a great definition of personality disorders. So what exactly, so I believe I know all the personality disorders, but I'm going to ask you specifically, what is borderline personality disorder?
Sure. So it describes a subset of symptoms. So the person who has it might look like They may be depressed a lot. They may have a lot of suicidal ideation. They may do things like cutting. They may have substance abuse problems. Underneath a lot of the behaviors is a lot of pain, a lot of emotional pain. So one of the ways they learned how to cope in the world is by latching onto these behaviors as a way to protect themselves. They're very afraid of abandonment, very hypersensitive to criticism, sometimes a little bit paranoid that other people are doing things to harm them. Not in a, you know, hearing voices paranoid kind of way, but more like it just in everyday life. People don't like me. People are doing something to me. That kind of paranoia.
So kind of a victim role persona
sometimes,
types.
Not always, but sometimes.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's one of the things to know about borderline personality is that it can be your doctor, your lawyer, it can be a therapist, it can be the mom, it can be an athlete. It's an equal opportunity personality disorder. You can be very, right. It doesn't. You can be very functional and be on the high end of the continuum. It's a continuum of where you fit in terms of severity. Low functioning people are often in and out of the hospital and in therapy for many years. High functioning people still have to have quite a bit of therapy. They may never go to the hospital. They may never even be suicidal, but they have some of the other kinds of things that come with borderline.
Okay. One of the things I remember when I was in your class and we kind of discussed this, the way, an easy way for me to understand, and so maybe the listeners, was a lot of times with people with borderline personality disorder, they kind of have a push-pull relationship with others around them, is how you kind of explained it. So it's, you know, I constantly want you around me, but I might do something that might push you away. Mm-hmm. But if you leave me, I'm immediately upset with you, but then I also want you around. So it's that back and forth. Is that correct?
Oh, that's a great description. We call that the I love you, I hate you syndrome. Mm. And we got that from an author who wrote a book about borderline that's of that title that is very popular reading around this topic. So what happens is you're either all good or you're all bad. Mm. You're either the best. Yeah, you're the best partner I've ever had. You're the best therapist I've ever had. I've had 15 therapists before, but you're the one. And then once they perceive that you do something that might be abandonment or criticism or rejection, really, then you become all bad. So yesterday I was all good, but today I'm the devil.
Okay.
They can't hold on to the idea that people can be good and bad.
Okay.
The gray of the world.
Yeah.
They see the world in black and white. You're either good or bad.
That's not anything in between.
Exactly.
And so you've mentioned quite a bit about abandonment and rejection. So for people who, the person who has to deal with the person who has borderline, how would they know that this might be what the person is perceiving? What would rejection or abandonment look like for them? Because sometimes it's something small, but like
something
what would
unusual.
That small thing what would that be like? What would they look for?
So a common one I see is that the partner, the one who doesn't have borderline personality, maybe has to go see his or her family on the weekend for a few hours. Someone who has the personality disorder feels that as an abandonment and as a rejection. So then they'll say, you know, you really need to spend time with your family here. It's called, in a way, splitting. That's one way of describing splitting. So they kind of pit you. It's either it's me or it's them.
Okay.
They'll even do things like that about a person's job. You know, they'll feel abandoned by when the person goes to work.
Oh.
So it's things that you wouldn't normally think of. It's not just someone up and leaving. It's what they perceive to be.
Okay. So it's not for people who may feel maybe in relationships with these people, or not just, you know, intimate relationships, but just familial relationships or friendships. So it's not something that you're intentionally doing sometimes. Mm-hmm. It just might be just how
it's perceived.
How they perceive it. It's just like, okay, I'm going, in your mind, I'm just going to work. I have to go to work.
Yeah,
and you're like, but you're leaving me. It's like,
most of the time, it doesn't make any sense to the person who's experiencing it.
Okay.
It feels like it comes out of nowhere and that part of borderline is a lot of emotional intensity.
Okay.
So your partner may be like having a meltdown because you have to go to work and they want you to stay home today because they're feeling sad today. And if you leave me, then then you don't love me.
Oh, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. I can see how that can be difficult to
be
in a relationship with someone that.
It can be exhausting.
Okay. Yeah. So you said that there's treatments and you mentioned that, you know, this particular personality disorder has been seeing strides in treatment. Mm-hmm. So what are common or the most effective, of course it doesn't work for everyone, but the most effective treatment that you've been seeing?
Sure. It's really a combination of approaches. So the first approach is the therapeutic relationship. They need to be in a long-term relationship with a counselor that they feel safe with, that they can be their full self, someone who is not afraid of working with them around these issues, someone who won't get frustrated and abandon them.
Oh.
Like they do very provoking things, provocative things with their counselors.
I can imagine.
So usually what we understand borderline to be is that there was a disruption a lot of times in the primary relationship in the first 5 years of life.
Okay.
Some kind of disruption or trauma.
What's the primary relationship?
Parent. Usually we think of mother, but it can be auntie, it can be dad, it can be
whoever the guardian is.
Whoever is a constant presence.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So is it one person or can it be, so if it's, you have a married couple who has a child, the disruption might not come from mom, but it could come from dad. Is that what you're saying?
It could come from dad. It'll look a little bit different unless dad is the primary caretaker.
Okay.
If he has borderline, but he's not the primary caretaker, it's going to have a definite impact, but not in the same way.
Okay. So how do the treatments work?
So you have the relationship, and that's about rewiring. It's a neurobiological disorder. If you have those traumas early on, then it impacts the brain development, and that's why you end up having all the symptoms that you have later. So what we know from research, which is really cool right now, is that we can rewire the brain.
Mm.
So even in there's research that talks about someone being in counseling, just doing talk therapy actually rewires the brain over time. So that piece is important because if there was a disruption in the early relationship, the therapist can help make up for that.
Okay.
But it takes a while, 3 to 5 years.
This is not
short term.
Okay.
You know, go get some coping skills kind of therapy.
Okay.
In addition to that, there's a combination of what we call dialectical behavior therapy, which is DBT for short, or cognitive behavioral therapy, which is CBT for short. There's a lot of crossover with both of those, but dialectical behavioral therapy was developed by Marcia Linehan a few years ago and was specifically created to help borderlines who had a lot of suicidal behaviors, self-harming behaviors.
Okay.
And that's a year's worth of, you work in different areas. It's really a year's worth of skills training and how to manage your the emotional intensity that's getting in your way.
Okay. So everyone, I hope you heard that normally it takes 3 to 4 years, but the short term, and I know a lot of people think short term, they don't think a year, but the short term is a year long process. So if you have this disorder or you feel that someone has this disorder, be prepared to be in it for the long haul. That's going to be a big, big thing for anyone who's dealing with something like this. Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned, like I said, trauma quite a bit. So in trauma in the primary relationship, so is this, what would constitute trauma that can cause this? Is this just an attachment issue? And if it is, can you explain what the attachment issue could be? Or is it sexual trauma, neglect, that type of abuse that can cause this? Is that what it is? Or is it not that? Or
It's mostly what that is, but not all of what it is.
Okay.
So it's disruptions that are experienced as traumatic to the infant. So it can be your obvious things like physical abuse, sexual abuse, mm-hmm. emotional abuse, and it doesn't have to be infancy. It's that 0 to 5.
To five, okay.
0 to 5, okay. 0 to 6 years is when the brain is developing. So okay. when bad things happen to us in that age frame, mm-hmm. it impacts the wiring in our brain.
Okay.
So that's why it takes so long to treat, is we're trying to rewire that which got... which happened when you're very young.
Okay.
Some other things are, for example, like say you were born premature with a lot of problems. You were a preemie baby. And you had to be in the hospital hooked up to tubes and whatever. And you couldn't be with your mom mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. So already you have some changes in wiring going on. Because it's traumatic for an infant. They don't have words and they don't have memory, but it's the idea of the person that I know the most by smell, by sound, by touch, mm-hmm. it is gone. So that's where the abandonment comes from, a sense of okay. the person who's supposed to keep me safe. They don't think about it in those terms, right?
Yeah.
But they feel a safe person.
Mm-hmm.
Something has interrupted that. It can be, you can have like... good parents, but something happened from the outside that's very significant.
Like what?
Like I said, for example, with the preemie thing. So
okay.
your parents can be good, but they can't rewire all of what occurs. So
okay.
most preemie babies have problems later on. They're not physical problems. They might be some tendencies towards emotional problems. And in severe cases, borderline personality or other kinds of severe things.
Okay. So one of the things that I remember you teaching us about borderline is that a lot of times it stems, I know mamas don't get upset, but mm-hmm. it stems a lot of times from mommies. It's passed down mm-hmm. kind of like a genetic thing, but it's not yeah. from mommies. So how is that?
That's a great question. So it is biological. So if you have a mom who grew up in trauma, she's going to pass that trauma down.
Okay.
So because she's not going to be able to connect or attach with you in the way that you need as an infant because her trauma is getting in the way.
Mm.
So maybe she's really anxious all the time, or maybe there's a lot of disruptions. Maybe she's having fights with your dad, or dad walks out, or really some significant kinds of things. But usually they had childhood trauma, and that's what they're passing down is
okay.
childhood trauma. They're not trying to, and it can't be avoided.
Oh, so sometimes a lot, say I was borderline, I had a borderline personality disorder and I was in treatment mm-hmm. and I'm pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way for me to try to mm-hmm. mitigate
mm-hmm.
passing that down to my child because I'm now aware of it or I'm in
yeah.
treatment for it? Is there any way to
yeah,
mitigate
definitely.
That?
Yeah, definitely. If you're aware of what's going on and you're aware of what you didn't get as
okay.
a kid, where your attachment got messed up, then you can learn the skills that you want to have to help your child feel secure attachment. A securely attached child does not have borderline personality disorder.
Okay.
So it would involve you learning how to really emotionally connect with your child. Moms with borderline personality, they have a very hard time. They're very loving
mm-hmm.
a lot of times. They really do love their children and want to do right, but they can't because the behaviors get in the way.
Okay.
There's some people with borderline that are not really loving.
Mm-hmm.
There's a subset of people who have borderline personality that are very self-absorbed and very cruel when they get their feelings hurt. So they act out in rage.
Oh, okay. Okay. So we've been talking a lot about attachment.
Mm-hmm.
So there are 4 different mm-hmm. types of attachment.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm learning, guys.
You
I know
are.
Stuff.
You
I
are.
Remember stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are 4 different types of attachment. And you talk about secure attachment. So
mm-hmm.
that is the attachment that is the quote unquote, for lay people, the good attachment.
That's yeah, the
attachment.
Gold standard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the ideal
yeah.
attachment that you
yeah.
want for your child to, you know, be able to know that you are there, feel that you're going
mm-hmm.
to be there for them, but also be able to act autonomously. And autonomously
yes.
means that they can act independent of you. So they're not yeah. afraid of just walking away from you and think that, oh, you're going to disappear and
right.
you're gone. It's just like, oh, okay,
right.
she'll come back or he'll come back
right.
or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So that's secure attachment.
Yeah.
So we can go back off. So I did secure. Mm-hmm. What is the other attachment?
Sure. So there's insecure attachment types. And so remember, what attachment means is your ability to connect mm-hmm. with other people. So your ability to connect in relationships. So if you have insecure attachment, you have anxious attachment, anxious ambivalent attachment, and you have avoidant attachment patterns or dismissive attachment patterns. And then you have what some people call a disorganized style of attachment, mm-hmm. and or you may be fearful avoidant.
Okay.
So the four main ones are secure, anxious, ambivalent, avoidant, and fearful avoidant.
What does insecure look like?
This is the person who is always asking you for reassurance. Is this relationship good? Are we good? Is there anything that's... okay.
I guess he's like, yeah, I remember this. Uh-huh. Are you having flashbacks to somebody?
Uh-huh. Yeah. They're very preoccupied with the relationship, but they're also pretty functional. It's just in their relationships they have a hard time.
So that person who seems... insecure, for lack of a better term.
Right. So that means that's how they are in relationships. Okay. Right. They are sometimes overly dependent on their partner to meet their needs. Sometimes they're worried a lot about something bad happening to their partner.
Okay.
Or their children. If you have an attachment style, it's how you attach to your children too.
Okay.
So it's how you attach to your boss too. Mm-hmm. So it's the same set of ideas and fears that get triggered in situations where you don't feel safe, either emotionally, usually emotionally safe.
Okay.
You feel like you're not good enough, that people don't like you, that you're not worthy in some ways.
Okay.
And there can be a fear of abandonment underneath that too, but it's not going to be as strong as it is with the borderline personality.
Okay. So the other one you said was anxious ambivalent.
Yeah, that's one of the insecure types.
So that's an insecure type. And then there is
avoidance.
Avoidance.
Yeah.
So what is avoidance?
Yeah. So a couple of different ways to look at avoidant is that some people don't want to attach at all. So there's some people in the world that whatever happened early on has made it difficult for them to connect. People who are insecure want to connect all the time too much, and they're scared about losing their connection. Mm-hmm. People who are avoidant, the standard avoidant person probably is more attached to processes. Like, these are people that their computer is more their friend than having a friend. They don't feel a need to connect to people, and it doesn't feel much like a loss.
Okay.
People that are, or they have less needs. So they can do some emotional connecting if they're high on the continuum.
Okay.
And then people who have, fearful avoidant are people that this can look more like your borderline or avoidant personality disorder. But not necessarily, people who are fearful, they want to attach really bad, but they're too afraid. So they stand on the sidelines. And they don't, like, they long for relationships, but they're so scared of getting hurt or abandoned that they don't take any risk to get in relationships.
Okay.
So you can see for people who really have that on the high end, that could be pretty debilitating. They don't have relationships, and they feel a lot of emotional pain.
Okay.
So there's secure and insecure attachment.
Okay.
Are the two broad headings. If you're insecure attachment, you're either anxious ambivalent or you're avoidant. I'm not going to talk about, and there's two types of avoidant. There's another thing too, but I'm not going to talk about that because it'd be too confusing for people.
That's fine. Yeah. Okay. All right. No problem. Which one of those insecure attachment styles relates most to, or what's the most common presentation in a person who has borderline?
Mm-hmm. It's going to be the anxious ambivalent to the extreme.
Okay.
That's going to sometimes fearful avoidant, but those folks usually look like avoidant people, loners.
Okay.
So there's a... Now I have to talk about it. There's a subset that we call disorganized attachment, and that probably most fits borderline. These are people that they have a wide variety of ways that they cope with threat and loss. So they sometimes might look avoidant, mm-hmm. and then they sometimes might look anxious, ambivalent, so okay. disorganized. There's no consistent way. The other types are very consistent in how you deal with threat.
Okay. And so for a person who you're trying to, part of the treatment for a borderline personality mm-hmm. Disorder is that you are trying, like you said, to rewire mm-hmm. essentially their attachment mm-hmm. style mm-hmm. in order to get them to closer to a secure attachment style yes. so that they can emotionally function in society
right.
in a better way.
It's called earned secure attachment.
Earned secure attachment.
Probably about 50% of the population. That's my guess. I don't have any research to back that up, but probably about 50% of the population has some variation on an insecure attachment because mm-hmm. none of us grow yeah. up in perfect families.
Exactly.
But it doesn't mean that you're...
I would probably say
more. Yeah, you might.
I was like, 50% is kind of low.
But a lot of people are pretty functional. They're not pathological. That's yeah. just the way of living and being in families. Sometimes we just didn't get exactly what we needed.
Mm-hmm.
When we're looking at rewiring the borderline personality attachment style, what we're looking at is creating an environment that kind of mimics what you might have not gotten as a kid. So what does that look like? That looks like a therapist who's consistent, you know, one that meets their obligations. They're there when they say they're going to be there at appointments. They are always on time or mostly always on time.
Mm-hmm.
They have a structure. They feel safe because they have certain boundaries that they create with the client to help the client contain the emotional ups and downs, because clients become afraid that the therapist is going to abandon them too. And sometimes
yeah.
they test that out with us by doing negative behaviors, like becoming more suicidal,
mm-hmm.
Cutting. Sometimes they'll get really verbally abusive in sessions. I had one person who had borderline personality that was on the high end of the continuum, send me 50 emails one day.
Mm-hmm.
50 emails to basically complain to my boss about how unethical I was with the codes attached, the
oh,
ethics
wow.
codes that we have to follow. I was wow. my own boss, so she was really sending it to me.
Okay.
She had decided that I was abandoning and not loving enough as her therapist, and so she was punishing me. At its worst, that's what it looks like. People,
okay.
that, they can become violent, they can become homicidal, very aggressive, verbally aggressive. They create scenes sometimes.
Okay.
So when it's at its most problematic, it causes problems for everybody else that's around them.
Oh, okay. Now in this, I'm going to take this into pop culture a little mm-hmm. bit. So in my, I'm a proud millennial. I know everybody complains about us, but I'm a proud millennial. With my generation, we like social media
mm-hmm.
and we're really big on that. And unfortunately people, we call it stunting for the gram, for Instagram.
Oh, that's a new one for me. I have to remember that.
So it's just like you're trying to pose and create
yeah.
this image on Instagram or Facebook or
yeah.
I, you know, or see, I'm old too. I don't know what the other stuff is. What are the other stuff? Whatever it is, your social media platform is Snapchat. There it is. Snapchat.
Yeah.
That's what I was looking for. That, you know, you're living this amazing life,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you're doing so many things for others to kind mm-hmm. of think that, and we are addicted to likes.
Yes.
We're addicted to likes. This
right.
this internet validation that,
yeah.
you know, if you post a picture, so I actually know someone who, if their picture doesn't get 100 likes, they'll take it down.
Wow.
Yeah, they'll yeah. take it down.
So that's a lot of energy.
It is.
Yeah.
And so is our society creating more, or is this how borderlines, or are there a bunch of borderlines out there that are trying to treat themselves through social media?
I think it's a little bit different because remember, for the underlying issue for someone with borderline is that attachment relationship. There are societal factors that can interfere with attachment relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Things like poverty, you know, that can create, depending on how that impacts the child and the child getting their needs met. So things like that may create a sense of fear and abandonment, which is the borderline piece. There's also this other piece, though, that as a culture, we don't feel like we're worthy unless we're getting validation from outside.
Yeah.
So we post the best because we want people to like us, because if they like us, then we must be good enough.
Yeah.
When the reality is we're good enough without, nobody has to like you. You're still good enough. It's very hard for people to follow that, because society does teach us that your worth is in your car, you know, your job, whether or not you're athletic, how you raise your kids.
Yeah.
Really, none of those things have anything to do with worth.
Yeah. And so I like that you brought up the factors of poverty. So this podcast, as you know, deals a lot with minorities.
Yeah,
and so unfortunately in this country, and in a lot of other countries, but we'll talk about this one, disproportionately minorities are on the lower SES, socioeconomic status. So they're poorer is what it is. And so the way that minorities that I know at least cope with this, they don't really think about attachment styles.
No.
So it's a matter of, is borderline something that's common in minorities, or it's going to be recognized? Because growing up, for lack of a better term, if you grew up in the hood and that's how everybody was. So most, I'll speak about black children because I'm black. So most black kids can tell you that they got beat.
Yeah.
They'll tell you that they got beat, and it's perfectly normal. There's nothing. It's not viewed as abuse. It's not viewed as anything wrong. As a matter of fact, now sometimes if you see kids doing stuff and in a video, you hear kids, no matter how old they are, you know, from 15 all the way to 85, said, oh, his mama needs to beat him or her or whatever it is. So it's not viewed as anything abusive. So because of the culture, we don't view that as an issue with attachment. So how exactly does that work when you, that's as a minority, you're not looking at your attachment because you normalize whatever it is that's going on?
Right. Most people don't look at their attachment. So that's true for minorities and everyone else as well. Okay. But there are cultural differences like you're talking about. I think it's underdiagnosed, but that's okay. I think it's underdiagnosed because it looks a little bit different. There's a lot more outward rage.
Okay.
So there's usually a difference between men and women. A lot of times too, women, they turn the rage inward. I'm going to cut myself. I'm going to burn myself. I'm going to have an eating disorder. I'm going to be suicidal all the time. There are men who do that too, so it's not a one-to-one correlation. But women, a lot of times, are internalizers, and men are externalizers. A lot of men with borderline personality disorder are in jail because the way that it manifested was aggressive action towards others. But the thing underneath is still the same: fear of abandonment and not being able to connect. But nobody asked them that.
I never thought about that. So would you, so there's a, there's been a big push about domestic violence recently. So I'm very happy to hear about that. So there's been this big push about being mindful of that, and how, I think it was 50%. I think I saw 50% or a little bit above 50% of women who die by homicide die by due to intimate partner violence. And would you say that some of those victims or the perpetrators of those crimes had borderline? So it's just like, you're not going to leave me, so I'm going to kill you. If I can't have you, no one can. Is that type of thing?
Yeah. Borderline or narcissistic, which is, and those two can have crossover or sociopathic. So those are different disorders. A sociopath does something because they enjoy hurting someone. A narcissist does it because you made them mad, because you don't honor them in the way that
they think they should be.
But yeah, borderline men or women have committed homicide or domestic violence.
Okay. That's interesting. I never really thought about, you're right, nobody does ask about that. And nobody would.
And nobody would. And when you think about it, the partner of someone who is being violent or abusive also has attachment issues. So you have two people that out of their attachment issues have come together, and they're just reenacting whatever they experienced as kids in some kind of way.
That makes perfect sense. They're mm-hmm. feeding each other's need in mm-hmm. an unhealthy yeah. way. Yeah. Okay. That's really, I never yeah. thought about that. Thank yeah. you. See, I'm learning yeah. stuff, everyone. I'm learning
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. I want to make sure that we clarify that the victim is still the victim, right?
Yeah.
No one chooses Absolutely. Yeah. to be. But someone who is going to be in a relationship like that is going to have an attachment.
Yeah.
Disorder. Otherwise, Absolutely. You don't stay. Otherwise, you're not attracted to someone.
Yeah. For a person that is with someone who does have borderline personality mm-hmm. disorder, and you know, sometimes you don't even realize it until later right. on, right? right? You realize it after.
If ever.
But sometimes you're in their relationship and you just love them. I just love Boo. They're just so nice. Mm-hmm. And they care about me because, you know, like you said, they're loving. Mm-hmm. Right. And so once they start to display these negative aspects of mm-hmm. it, how, and you recognize it for whatever reason, you, mm-hmm. you Googled it, you know, whatever right. it is, you
That's
looked it up.
A lot of people find out about it.
You Googled it and you're like, all right, I think my wife, my husband, my partner has this going mm-hmm. on. How would you suggest that they deal with that beyond just, mm-hmm. you know, getting them therapy? Because we encourage, okay, get mm-hmm. let them get therapy. But how do you yeah. as an individual try to yeah. deal with that? Or is there anything that you can do
sure.
as an individual to yeah. deal and stay in a relationship if you want to?
If
you want to stay in a relationship with someone yeah. like that for whatever reason, yeah. how do you deal with that?
Yeah, it's really difficult. It's very difficult because it's trauma passing to the partner now.
Mm.
So they're feeling the same feelings as the person with borderline has. They're confused. They feel unsafe. They, you know, it's chaotic. They don't know what's going on. Things don't quite feel right. I usually suggest that they do, there are DBT family groups where you can learn the skills that you need to deal with someone who has that particular issue in your life. And also to get your own therapy to be psychoeducated okay. about the disorder and how it looks and what you can and can't do.
Okay.
You know, ultimately, a lot of people decide not to stay in the relationship mm-hmm. because it doesn't seem very hopeful.
Okay.
But if you have someone who's higher functioning, then, you know, there may be some hope that these patterns can really change. Once the client knows they have this too, you
okay.
know, then they can take an active, without shame. That's okay. really important.
It's
that
a big
you're
thing.
Not bad if you have this illness. Okay. You're in a lot of pain.
Okay. And my final question to you, because we're running out of time here. I am going to have an amazing guest on our mm-hmm. next show. He is a gay black man mm-hmm. Who is a millennial like myself.
Yeah.
And he actually has been diagnosed with borderline personality mm-hmm. disorder. And we've been talking a lot about trauma, mm-hmm. But he doesn't have the mm-hmm. trauma that we have kind mm-hmm. of been discussing. And when I mentioned it to you mm-hmm. earlier, prior to starting the recording, mm-hmm. you mentioned that he may have been born sensitive. What is that?
Yeah. So some of us come into the world with sensitive wiring to begin with. Sometimes you might know you have a sensitive kid because they're colicky or they cry a lot and nothing seems to soothe them.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a good parent who is securely attached, but you have a child that has special needs that you have no idea.
Okay.
Because you don't know that your child is sensitive. You think they're like any other child.
Mm-hmm.
So the sensitive child gets overwhelmed by stimulation. They get overwhelmed by feelings a lot, overwhelmed by light, sound, and they lead by feelings. So logic doesn't apply in their world a lot
okay.
of times. It's, I feel this is right. Feelings are facts. That's not logical, right?
Yeah.
So if I feel like you're leaving or abandoning me, then you are abandoning me.
Okay. Okay.
So they have those feelings that are really strong, but they have usually logical parents.
Mm.
So the logical parent is trying to teach them, you don't have to feel like that. Why? They'll say, you're too sensitive.
Yeah. You do hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was sensitive. I heard that. Telling someone who's wired to be sensitive that they're too sensitive is basically creating invalidation in their environment. You're telling
yeah.
them don't be who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates an experience that is traumatic in and of itself without there being any abuse
okay.
involved.
Okay. That's interesting. I'm definitely going to be bringing that up when he comes. So I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to come here.
My pleasure.
Is there anything that you want to wrap this up with? Any final thoughts that you want to leave us with? Drop some gems, some knowledge.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think this is great what you're doing. That's what I'd like to say. This is great what you're doing because... you know, minorities especially don't have a lot of access and don't reach out and ask for help around some of these things. This is just the, you know, that's just my crazy mom. That's just what she does. You know, they're not used to looking at mental disorders in this way or asking for help. So I think this is a great opportunity for people to learn more and ask for help. Okay. Especially with this disorder.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I learned some stuff that, you know, and I'm in the field, everyone, so tells you how much. But once again, thank you, everyone, for joining us. I really, really appreciate it. Once again, this is Dr. Gay who came with us today. I appreciate her being here, and I am signing off, Therapist KP. Have a good one, everyone. All opinions shared on this podcast are solely that of the participants and do not reflect the views of any governing mental health professional board. The host of this podcast has received written consent to share any and all stories that have been presented.